Welcome to a new episode of The Brand Called You. Today we have Vikram Singh, who is an adventurer. He leads people to see wildlife. Vikram, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Vikram is an engineer from BMS College of Engineering. He did his MBA from IMT Ghaziabad. Then he decided to be in the corporate sector. So he worked with Leo Burnett and Nexus. And as he says, he joined these companies to pay his credit card bills. And then he got tired of the corporate world very quickly and went back to his passion. And he founded Wild World India.
That's right.
Vikram, you spent 6 months between Uttarkashi and Gangotri. You stayed at Tapovan.
Right.
And you're one of the few people I have met who have actually been able to make their passion into a career.
Right.
Talk to us about your early life.
I'll start with the Tapovan bit.
Sure.
Okay. You know, I did my engineering from BMS College, Bangalore. And it was not because I wanted to do engineering. It was largely I liked the city. I had some friends there and I was looking at moving from Delhi to a different culture. But it was a terribly long course and I was struggling to get through it. And the only thing that kept me going was I was like, at the end of this course, I will take 2 years off and I will just travel.
Mm-hmm.
So I started down south and then made my way up to Delhi where my family was. And then I went to the mountains and I spent about 5 to 6 months between in the Gangotri area.
Was this some kind of a process of self-discovery?
It was really, you know, I was pretty, by the end, I mean, I was fairly lost. So it was, you know, and it's that age in life where you are also fairly, you know, you're insecure about the future and things. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have a clear direction. So I thought I would just take this time off and see where it leads me. And I always loved the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
So I was there hanging around, you know, not enough money. Trekking, not enough gear. I stayed maybe a month with a Mataji in a cave.
Mm-hmm.
She was from Karnataka as well. And I could speak very basic Kannada.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it was nice. I met some interesting people.
Including Jackie Chan, you said.
Including Jackie Chan, some alpine climbers. I think the Empress of Japan had come there to meditate. So it was a fairly elite crowd on top of the mountain, and it's just you know, Tapovan is a kind of a plateau, and on top is this is the Shivling.
Where is Tapovan?
Tapovan is you know, when you go to Gangotri, mm-hmm. you reach Gangotri, and then from Gangotri you climb up, and you know, you see this river coming down, and they call it the Akash Ganga.
Yeah.
So you kind of just climb up the Akash Ganga. Mostly you cannot see it because it's misty, and then when you reach there on top is this fantastic valley with, you know, wildlife.
And at what height?
This would be, I would think, somewhere around
15,000?
Yeah, it would be around just below or around 4,000 meters.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So, wow. And then you came back and decided to do your MBA.
Then I came back and, you know, I didn't really discover much.
Uh-huh.
I did figure out what to do next.
Yeah.
But as things would have it, and then my parents, you know, said maybe I should do an MBA. I was happy to go back to a university. Or a college or a campus, because you know, there was no particular job or something. And the MBA turned out better than the engineering,
mm-hmm.
because you know, it was not so much about maths and science. It was more marketing and things. So the MBA was like more like a breeze compared to what I had done in Bangalore. And it was shorter, of course, closer home. So,
and then came Leo Burnett.
Then came Leo Burnett. I got recruited on day one. Leo Burnett was this, I remember them coming and making a presentation, and they put out these Marlboro Man ads.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this looks interesting. And they were just coming into India at that point in time. So, yeah. And then I got into Leo Burnett.
And then what made you decide to walk away from the corporate sector? Because that's a very gutsy decision.
Right. It was also very scary at that point in time because, you know, it's hard because, you know, when I was going through it, I was still not clear. But there came a point after 4 years that, and Leo Burnett was actually a very nice organization, very friendly, you know. I was part of meetings with my, you know, bosses. But, you know, there came a time when I just couldn't get myself to go to work. And so all the people told me, you know, take some time off, go to the mountains, take the people, my colleagues and my bosses, and take, you know, go do a trek and come back and, you know, you'll get over this phase. But I actually didn't. And I still remember now, one of my bosses from Bombay asked me, where do you see yourself 5 years from now? And I really couldn't answer that question. But I said that, you know, it'll be a disservice to the company if I don't come. And so I finally quit. And
very interesting you say this 5 years from now, because I've spent most of my life in the corporate world. And I've always said that if a boss asks you,
right,
where do you see yourself 5 years from now?
Right.
Then he doesn't know what he's asking, because I'm sure he himself doesn't know. She doesn't know where they will be 5 years from now.
Right.
So maximum they can say is, where do you see yourself next year or year after next?
Exactly.
So I'm glad you had the same response.
You know, the one thing I learned from there was that most people don't know.
Correct.
I mean, you know.
Correct.
So, you know, you are making decisions, you are doing things without knowing.
Correct.
And that was a big learning from my corporate world, because, you know, I was also working in new business. So we would pitch for things and we would do things. And I remember one particular instance, it's come back to me now after maybe 20 years. Mm-hmm. You know, we were talking about increasing consumption of tea for some brand in Southern India.
Mm-hmm.
And we were all going through, and I said, you know, maybe where coffee is consumed more. And I said, you know, or was it the other way around? And I said, you know, as a kid, I remember, like, when I used to tell my parents, you know, or my mother that I won't, she was like, no, if you drink this, you'll become dark.
Mm.
So, you know, I told these guys that maybe that's the thing.
Mm.
And they were all there and we talked and, you know, ended up with a few beers. And the next day was this a big pitch. And these guys actually used that and said, so, you know, I realized that, you know, everybody is as clueless as me.
I agree. So let's move on into adventure, which is something that you've built a whole life around.
Right.
And, you know, for an Indian traveler, wildlife basically meant going to Africa and within that going to Kenya.
Right.
And even today, aspirationally, the migration seems to be there on everyone's mind.
Right.
You've done a lot of work in India.
Yes.
Talk to us about wildlife in India, the opportunities here.
Right. India is actually, you know, we might not have the density of wildlife like in Kenya or Tanzania or East Africa or other places, Southern Africa. But, you know, we have amazing diversity.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen now that the trend has changed. I see a lot of Indians now traveling.
Absolutely.
When I started the business, it was a bit funny because, you know, my business is largely inbound. So it's like foreigners coming into India. And when we used to go to the parks in central India or Gujarat or places, you know, we used to say that, you know, the foreigners come to see the parks and the wildlife and the Indians come to see the foreigners.
Yeah.
I mean, it was that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, now I see people from Bangalore, people from, and they're traveling and they're doing this. But, you know, India, I mean, it's consumed me. It took me like 12 years of traveling to actually see most of the places. I still haven't been to Orissa and a few other places, but, you know, like I did a lot of the eastern Himalayas,
mm-hmm.
For birds largely, but even mammals. So starting from the plains of Assam, you know, which is almost at sea level at 200 meters,
mm-hmm.
We go up to about 4,200 meters at Sela Pass. So when you are actually going, you know, from this altitude to there, the whole diversity changes, and then we do Eagle's Nest, and now we go looking for smaller cats there. I have done a lot of Western India, which a lot of people don't associate that with the wildlife thing, but it's probably a hotbed of endemics.
Okay.
You know, I mean, of course, the Asiatic lion and wild ass is what people know, but, you know, there's a tiny park called Velvadar, which is the only grassland to be given a national park status.
Okay.
So there's the coast, there's Mandvi.
And what animals do you see there?
You know, basically it's actually a refuge. What's happened is, like, you know, in our things, we have lost our grasslands very fast, like all over the world, like the prairies are gone because people look at it as wasteland and most of it is converted to agriculture.
Yeah.
But it's largely, you know, it's got the highest concentration of black bucks, which was once an abundant deer, but now a Schedule A animal. But you would see some things which would not be easy in other parks, like you would see wolves. You would see the striped hyena, jungle cats, amazing bird. It's the largest harrier roost in the world.
Wow.
So in the winters, you can actually see about 5,000 harriers come and land there. Great bird life, you know. So it's a very small park, just I think 30 or 40 square kilometers, but I could probably spend a week there.
Amazing. So which are some of the more popular destinations for tourists, Indian tourists in India?
I would say the tiger is a fairly big draw because everybody wants to see a tiger. So the more popular parks where you can actually see them easily would be like Ranthambore. In central India, maybe Bandhavgarh, Kanha, Kadoba in Maharashtra, Pench, Satpura.
I have seen tiger in Kanha.
Right. It's one of my favorite parks. Then if you are down south, then it could be, you know, Kabini, Nagarhole, yeah. Bandipur.
So, you know, you now, of course, you're looking at outside India and we'll talk about that.
Right.
But when you're curating a trip
right.
For people, whether it's foreigners or Indians,
right.
What kind of preparation do you have to do and what kind of preparation do I have to do?
Right. You know, because we have kind of kept ourselves specialized. Mm. It wasn't like that when I started, but now I'm getting more and more specialized into what I do. So mostly people who find me are already fairly educated in terms of, I mean, they might know what they want. Mm. They probably don't know how to go about the logistics. Of course, they need, that's why they would get in touch. For me, what helps is that, you know, I have traveled a fair amount myself. You know, I'm a birder, you know, I know photography, I know mammals. So it's now fairly easy. And I mean, I might have, since I started, I might have probably curated 10,000 trips. Not all of them would have happened, but you know, I can just close my eyes and actually see the whole thing flow through. It takes me.
And these were about a week?
You know, typically almost 99% of my business is foreigners coming into India. So typically it would be like a 2-week plan.
Okay.
I mean, would be one of our shortest tours. But we have done things like 90 days in India. We have done 70-day tours. I particularly like the long tours where people want to spend a month.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a photographer, you might want to spend, you might want to give yourself more time to maximize your opportunities. So I normally recommend like 2 weeks. A lot of the people who will travel with me are probably retired. They have the time, they have the money. So, you know, we could, and we try and show them as much as possible. I've had people who've come back to me. I have a lady who's traveled 16 times with me already. So most of them come back.
Amazing.
And we try and tell them not to do too much in a short span of time. I definitely recommend spending more time in each park than trying to do too much in one go, because it's wildlife, you know, so, and it's not like Kenya.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can miss out on things. So I would rather say that you go slow and, you know, see more in each park than try and do the circuit as fast as possible.
Okay. And is there any seasonality about this?
There is a seasonality. You know, it's essentially winters is by far the better time. The parks close for 3 months. In fact, most of the tiger reserves are shut during the monsoons.
Okay.
Yes. And then, you know, then it also depends. And after about April, then you also need to be very heat resistant, you know. So if you're coming from Europe or the colder parts of the United States, then, you know, it's you're talking about 47, 48 degree temperature. I do get people who do that. I'm totally burnt out. I'm tanned because I just spent 10 full days in Pantanal. And
okay.
We were largely looking for jaguars. So we were spending about 12 hours on the boat. And it was about 42, 44 degrees. It's so humid being on the river.
Pantanal, just for our viewers, is Brazil.
Is Brazil.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So I'm going to come to
right.
your overseas because I know you're doing some very exciting things.
300 bites in my hand.
okay.
There are a lot of flies there.
I know. So, you know, you also developed an interest in photography. And you are now leading trips to Botswana, Norway, Brazil. Tell us about some of these experiences. I mean, you know, what is it like working in India and then going and working in such diverse countries.
Right. You know, working in India is a little bit of a challenge. A challenge in the sense that we have a. It's not like we have a forest department. We have a tourism sector. All of this could be a little better integrated. Uh-huh. You know, there are rules and regulations which are required, but it's still not as harmonious as it would be in a place like Botswana, where tourism also started much earlier. They have a high value, low impact tourism policy. So it's an expensive, fairly expensive destination compared to East Africa. The Arctic I went to in 2016. I went to Svalbard, which is almost the North Pole. I flew from Oslo to a place called Longyearbyen. It's a small town. It's the northernmost town, and I think it has a population of 2,000 people.
Okay.
Interesting thing about there is that you're not allowed to die there.
Okay.
Because your body won't decompose, and so we went to Longyearbyen and we took this boat.
Okay.
And the whole archipelago is called Spitsbergen. Mm-hmm. So we were essentially looking for polar bears, but while we were looking for polar bears, we saw walrus, and birds, and a few whales and Arctic fox, and it's one of the most pristine places I've been to. And I personally have an affinity to the cold. I might have led 16 to 17 snow leopard trips myself.
Yes.
So I like the cold. It brings out, it just makes me more alive. And I really, and of course I had gone as a participant. I didn't know that I would be doing that tour. And I really liked that trip, and we had some nice polar bear sightings. And so I decided to go back.
Okay. And this time lead your own group.
This time lead my own group.
Okay.
And then subsequently, I went to other places in the Arctic. Last year, I went to Eastern Greenland, which is might be one of the least visited places. We had a fantastic polar bear sighting there as well. Although wildlife there is a little shy because the local tribe, the Inuits, can still hunt.
Mm-hmm.
So, wildlife is a bit skitty. So the trip was largely about ice and icebergs and landscapes. And of course, we got the Northern Lights on. So it was again a fantastic trip.
So this must have been what, January, February, to get the Northern Lights?
January, January, February would be a good time. Mm-hmm. But even in September, I saw the lights there.
Okay.
January, I went to a place called, I went to the Finnish Lapland. I flew into a place called Kittilä.
Yeah.
And that was for largely Northern Lights and the winter landscapes. That was fantastic. Okay. But it's probably the coldest place I've gone to.
Right.
And, we would just go out, and I went with my partner who works with me in India. He's the Nikon ambassador for Switzerland.
Okay.
And he's an authority on Northern Lights. So, I've traveled a lot with him in India and the Himalayas, and I told him that I would like to come and do this trip. I took two people with me as well for that trip. And, a lot of people here ask me that, we want to go and see the Northern Lights. And I tried to tell them the way I did it was, we were out almost all night. Some days we would just, because I had this person with me who knew the area, and we would like to shoot things with the boreal forests in the foreground, with frosted trees. And sometimes we would just walk into a frozen lake, and there would be like this much of snow. And we would just clear a patch as big as your carpet, put our tripods there, and stand there all night. And it could be minus 40, minus 42, but there was a car close by, so every 2 hours we could sit in the car and heat up, warm ourselves a little bit. But almost every day we were coming back to a room at 5 or 6 in the morning.
Amazing.
So
amazing.
That was really like seeing and photographing.
So coming back to now India, you said that you have a fascination for cats.
Yes.
And we have a lot of big cats.
Yes.
From lion to tiger to leopard.
Yes.
What is happening on conservation? There's Project Tiger, you've got lion and gir and probably some other parts of the country. And yet, every week I see a leopard being killed.
Yes.
Because we humans are invading into their territory.
Yes. It's a bit of a challenge, if you were to look at this statistically, we are talking about almost 20% of the world's population.
And of cats, is here?
No, of human population.
Okay.
I'm getting to the human-man-animal conflict.
Sure.
And, you know, in spite of India being a large country, it's probably 2.2% of the landmass. So when we talk about such human pressure on a place like this, there's bound to be human conflict.
Mm.
And if you see typically what's happened is, by the way, you know where we are, Aravallis, this used to be a, they were tigers. If you read very old hunting records, they are like, you know, the British shot 5 tigers near Palam Airport in a day.
Yeah.
But, you know, so what happens is, what's happening is that, one of the biggest thing is, the biggest concern should be habitat loss, you know, more than anything else. And so, you know, parks have become, you know, there are no corridors connecting parks, like a place closer, like Ranthambore, you know, every now and then. And tigers are good breeders, they're cats. So if the population grows up, the tigers have to move out. Some stray out, or some are pushed out, or the older ones go out. Just recently, as recently as 1 week ago, a tiger killed another person in Ranthambore in Kailadevi.
Mm-hmm.
And this is his third kill.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really something of a challenge. But it's also a miracle that we still have so much of. I mean, you know, India's looked at as a conservation model in most of Southeast Asia,
mm-hmm.
because they have wiped out pretty much everything that they had. It doesn't help that we have neighbors like China.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it is a challenging thing. It's a challenging situation. But we have a forest department which works, and it's a fairly independent. Most of the other countries like Vietnam, etc., it's the foreign organizations which are. So it's I mean, it's not a rosy picture, but it's a fight.
So you worked with tiger, you snow leopards, mahaseer, mammals, birds. Talk to us about mahaseer, and
that's
also tell us which of these would be your favorite.
You know, I've always, I mean, since I've been a little scattered, I was the mahaseer thing came out of my trips to Corbett.
And you also have a lodge or a villa.
You know, I started a lodge with some partners, and then we parted. So they are still running the lodge. But basically, you know, we wanted to do something. It was not so much about the fishing, although I was an angler as well for a fish. You know, the mahaseer basically is like the tiger. It's an indicator species. It only survives in like pristine river systems. And the lifeline of Corbett is the river called Ramganga.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, you know, our rivers are not in the best of health.
Absolutely.
So we saw an opportunity to do something, you know, some like a conservation project. And at that point in time, the Uttarakhand government was looking at doing like a PPP, private partnership model. So this person I was working with, he had already identified this small patch of land, which was very close to the tiger reserve.
Mm-hmm.
And we started, you know, we involved the locals and we told them, you know, most of them would kill and eat fish because source of protein and food.
Mm-hmm.
And we tried to tell them that, you know, we can get anglers here, foreign anglers who would pay you more money if
mm-hmm.
you take them out to fish.
Yeah.
So it was actually a really successful model.
Okay.
You know, and we saw the whole river thing change in a span of 3 years, 2 years. And basically all we did was just let it be. And it's amazing what nature can do if you just...
That's what they say, that if you leave nature alone,
it just comes
it revives.
Back. My brother had been, you know, he has been acquiring some land in Ranthambore, which was almost like a wasteland 10 years, 15 years ago. Now it has tigers. And every summer there are like 4 or 5 tigers. It's a thriving forest now. So basically all you need to do is leave it alone.
Amazing.
And the birds, yeah, you know, a big segment of my business is birders. And I like birds because you know, you can see them anywhere. I mean, even if I'm driving to your place, I look out. There was a period of time I would wear my binoculars even in Delhi. It's a bit strange, but, you know, I can go to Sultanpur.
Yeah.
I can go... Delhi, by the way, has, as a city, I think after Nairobi, it has the highest count of birds.
Really?
Yeah.
And this doesn't include pigeons only?
No. Pigeons are pests, but Delhi has... it's incredible.
Yeah.
We had a guy who traveled with us and he was doing something called the big year, which is that in a span of 1 year, they want to see 6,000 birds or 7,000 birds. And he came 2 years ago and he got in touch with me, and I think he was coming from Sri Lanka, and I fixed up his trip for him in Delhi. And when he reached here, he was already 3 months into his trip. I think his highest count in a day was around Delhi.
Really?
Yeah. In spite of being in the forest.
So, you know, Vikram, coming to the end of our show, but you know, you work so much with nature,
right?
So much with animals and so much with, you know, birds, and I'm sure you're going to start working with sea mammals, etc. What have been some of your key learnings, 20 years with nature? And most of us tend to take nature for granted.
You know, there's been a lot of personal, there's been a lot of personal growth, personal learnings. I'm not getting into the conservation or the nature part of it, but it's really stretched me as a person.
Mm-hmm. In what way?
In, not just the wildlife. I work with the communities outside who are living there, and almost in all our tours, we ensure, one of the reasons why it took me so long to put this whole thing together was we would always use a local guide who's probably born in the park or who might have lived in the park and those villages are relocated, because they really are the true custodians of their natural heritage.
Absolutely.
So it's been, when I started, I had no map. I was pretty clear that I don't want to become a travel agent. This is my subject. And my corporate career was only 4 years, but this has been a much, much longer time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I will probably stretch it now, since I'm now looking at places outside of India. Mm-hmm. So,
but what can the common man, we are seen by thousands and thousands of people, your video will be seen by 1,000 people. What would you like to share with them about, how important it is for us to keep all nature has given us safe and secure?
It's a bit of a scary situation. I think, it's quite unprecedented. The level of extinction we are seeing now is probably the highest since the dinosaur. I think to begin with, one of the things we need to do, especially like people living in the urban parts of the country, we need to consume less. Mm. If we don't need those 4 cars, we should have 1.
Yeah.
We probably don't need 3 houses. Mm. You live in 1, because all of these things, whatever we consume, puts a big pressure on our natural resources. Mm. I've just, since I've been to Pantin Island, we were reading about the Amazon fires and it was disturbing, and all the news was coming up. And I just looked at one statistics. I was trying to do my own research, and also because I was concerned because I was going there. And I saw that, I saw their beef export figures. And last year I saw, I don't know the exact thing, but almost 23 or 24% of their beef was exported to Hong Kong and about 18% to China.
Mm.
And maybe 7% to the EU. So we have actually started, this, we need to just go a little bit easy on our consumption patterns.
Sure.
That's probably...
Well, that's what they also always say, that the difference between humans and animals is that an animal will only kill as much as it wants to eat.
Right.
We kill just for the sake of it.
Right.
Because we want to be able to hoard and put it in our deep freeze, etc.
Right. And we also preach, I see a lot of people preaching to the people living in the rural India, mm-hmm. I think they're doing a better job of coexisting mm-hmm. than most of us staying in the cities.
So Vikram, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
It's been an honor to have you, someone of your stature, talking about nature.
Thank you.
On our program, and wish you lots of success. And I'm sure you'll have really incredible success outside India as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Simply search for the Brand Called You. Thank you, and see you next week.